the Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And we are fully into the fall. We're at the end of September. And this, for the rest of the world, will tell you that this is one of the worst weeks to be in New York, because our people from all over the world are here for the General Assembly of the United Nations. And what that means is that traffic is horrendous and streets are closed. Hey, Fanny, you actually drove into work today. Most people don't drive into work in Manhattan, but sometimes people have to. Tonight you have a youth ministry meeting, don't you, Fanny? So
yeah.
You drove in today. So how was your drive in today?
Today was about 3 hours. I left around
7:30. Where'd you come from, St. Louis?
Might as well. I was telling my coworkers I should have just driven to Rhode Island because it would have been the same thing. But I left my house around 7:30, which is usually when I leave when I have to drive. And I get here 8:45, 9 o'clock-ish. And today I got here around 10 o'clock and it was terrible.
Should we dock your pay?
Please, no. I'll stay an extra hour tonight.
Okay. Well. So let me tell you my tale of woe. My tale of woe is I know enough to not drive this week in Manhattan, except on Monday, for a variety of reasons, I had to drive my car from the church I live in near Grand Central Station to the office because of some stuff that had to be done with car, changing cars, et cetera, et cetera. It took me, listeners, to go about a mile, maybe a mile and a half. It took me an hour and 45 minutes.
Oh my God. I would have just walked.
Yep.
left the car.
It is awful. So if this week can make all of us New Yorkers anti-United Nations, and it's got nothing to do with world peace, it's got nothing to do with security, it's got to do with traffic.
Yeah.
And it's just not a good situation that is there. So anyway, but can I tell you something good that I'm doing? Actually I'm doing today. Today, a little bit later on, I'm going to go apple picking with my cousin. Yep. Yep.
Nice.
Jake, have you ever gone apple picking?
I believe I have when I was a kid. I haven't done it since I was maybe like 10 or something.
Okay. Fanny, have you gone apple picking?
Yes, and pumpkin picking.
Okay, where'd you go apple picking?
Well, there are a bunch of different, farms near us. There's one about an hour away, which is my favorite.
And us in is where? Where's you in?
I'm not sure.
Well, you're in New Jersey, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm in Jersey, but these farms, I'm not sure where they are. Okay. I forget the names, but there's one maybe 10 minutes away from me. It's a smaller farm, which isn't my favorite. The one further out is a lot bigger. It has a maize, corn. So that one's my favorite.
Okay. So I have to say this with a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of fear, because there are so many wonderful places to pick apples. In New York State. You know, I mean, it's just great apple picking in New York City. I've done that. However, my cousin lives in Connecticut. And because I'm going up there, we're going to go in an orchard that is in Connecticut.
Oh,
but,
nice.
But the nice part of the orchard is the orchard goes back to, I believe, 1746.
What? Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, so it's a really, really old
that's
orchard.
That's cool.
And the part that's really nice about it is, it's not one of those kind of really developed orchards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there and it's wonderful and it's good. And they have a little store there and you can buy cider and you can buy, they even have a pizza oven. But some of the places have become very, very kind of nicely family oriented where there's a lot of rides, there's stuff like that. This orchard's claim to fame is apples. And apples and more apples. That's what they got. That's what they got.
That's
so
funny.
So okay. So here's what I want to do. You want to bet? So how many pounds of apples I'm gonna pick? I pick a lot. I'm telling you. You, Jake and Fanny, you want to have a contest? How many pounds of apples you think
pounds. I'll say 15.
Okay, 15 pounds. Yeah.
Apples go bad at some point. Yeah. Who's going to eat 15 pounds unless you own horses or something? Unless you work for the Kentucky Derby, you don't need 15. I'm going 10. 10 is still a lot.
Yeah, it is.
See, when
do you make a lot of apple pies? Is that why?
You know how many pounds of apples I picked
last
year?
Oh my goodness, I'm scared to ask.
67 pounds.
No.
67. So you got to 60 and you were like, this ain't quite enough. I need 7 more.
Well, you just keep walking and you pick the apples and it's like, whatever. What I do is I make applesauce.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
And applesauce freezes great. So actually, I have to finish the applesauce from last year I have to finish it.
Right, before you go.
Before I go. But I might not. I might still have a little bit left over. But anyway, so I'm going apple picking. So I'll report on how many pounds
I thought 15 was a lot. I was like, oh my God.
I thought 15 was too much. Yeah. I cut it down by a third. Yeah. I went with 10.
No. Those are pikers. I mean, those are kind of, you got to do the.
Well, my question is then, how do you carry all of these 67 pounds of apples.
So here's what they do. So you got to fight. You got to, right. But we're from New York, so you elbow people out. And they have little carts, like little red carts.
Yeah.
And you got to bring bags. Okay, so you bring bags. Mm-hmm. And then you put the bags on the cart. Mm-hmm. And you do it. And that's how you kind of...
That's a good marketing scheme that they have. Just give everyone carts. That's how you buy a lot.
Yeah. And then, and then you wheel it back up and it's great. It's great. it is wonderful. So let's go to our first guest. Our first guest is Kelly Kaminsky, who is the Director of Disaster Services for Catholic Charities in South Carolina. And we're going to speak about the floods that were just there and the difficulty that people are experiencing in that situation there. So we're going to talk about Hurricane Florence and what has gone on there. Kelly Kaminsky, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. I know this is not a easy time and it's a kind of a sad situation that's there. So I do appreciate your taking the time to spend a few minutes with us on the phone today. So Kelly, give our listeners a little bit of sense of the extent of this flood, what was going on. Just give us the listeners a little bit of that sense.
Absolutely. So here in South Carolina, we were really preparing for the initial impact of Hurricane Florence a couple weeks ago. And so we were prepared and ready for that initial response and the storm surge and all things that go along with a hurricane. And we were ready for some flooding, but this is becoming the flood that will never end. We are now on week 3 of response, and one of our major rivers finally crested today. And then we are still waiting for our intercoastal waterways to crest and a lot of our other rivers that drain into the rest of the state to crest later this week and weekend. So
Kelly, let me, again, for the sake of our listeners who are throughout the country, they may have a different terrain, they may have a different situation, they may be in a very high area or dry area. So tell our listeners, what's the significance of a river cresting, not cresting, or what does that mean?
So I'm with Catholic Charities, not a great meteorologist, but I will do my best interpretation because I've learned a lot about rivers in the last couple weeks. Basically, it means that there's a certain level that the rivers can handle and that the normal amount of water that the basins can hold within our rivers before they start to flood. So the biggest thing is that before the rivers actually crest, it means that there's whatever flooding is already sitting in those low-lying areas or the parts of the town that are already flooded are going to continue to flood. Once the river crests, we know that the water can start receding after that point because the water line is going to go down in the river and it's going to be able to actually hold the river water and the basins will be able to hold the amount that's in there. So until the rivers crest, whatever is coming into people's houses is going to keep coming. And you still have to wait a little bit after the water crests and then we know that the end is coming after it crests.
So I guess to Kelly, I think that was really good. And let me translate it a little bit. You know, if you're filling, you know, a sink or a tub or something, and you're worried about it's overflowing, and like the waters keep coming, it gets higher and higher and higher, and you're not sure whether it's going to overflow. But at some point, it gets to the highest it's going to go, and it begins to go back down. And I guess that's kind of what cresting means, is that until, if there's flooding and it's continuing to go up, the flooding's going to continue until it begins to go down, at least somewhat. I think that's what I
correct.
I heard what
that's been my interpretation of it this
good.
Week. So
well, and you're there. So
yes,
but so you know, I mean, usually, and again, I'm from the New York area. The experience that I think I've had is that so a big storm comes in, and it comes, and there's a lot of rain, maybe for a day, and it keeps moving on. And, you know, then the water goes back down. But what you're telling me, this has gone on for weeks?
Yes. So we are now into week three of response from the floods. We aren't expecting for the response to end until next week. And we've actually been told locally in the state of South Carolina that we can expect that the water that is here, because there's just so much everywhere right now, that it's not even going to start drying up and really going back into the rivers as much until in some places October. So we're just going to have sitting water for a very long time here.
So that's, I mean, really, because isn't, I mean, again, to help our listeners throughout the country, in a good time, Carolina is kind of in a low place. Is that, they refer to that sometimes as the low country?
Yeah, so the southern part of our state is the what it's referred to as the low country area. The areas that are actually flooding, though, in South Carolina is the PD region. And if you've ever heard of or been to Myrtle Beach, that's kind of the highlight of what is in the PD area. But that is our most northern part of the PD region, and we cover all the inlands as well as down to like Georgetown, which sits right above Charleston County. That is the area of most impact right now is our PD region.
So, okay, so now let's go on to the work that you're doing. Given all of the devastation, and I assume there was some, if not extensive, power outages, I assume that people had to evacuate their houses. I assume that some of the houses have been damaged and people can't just move back into them. They need repair. I assume that's kind of what's going on down there, isn't that?
Yeah, so we have an estimate of about 11,000 people who have had to relocate due to the flooding already. Three of our school districts are closed until further notice due to the amount of people who are displaced and shelters still having to be open. We still have 10 shelters throughout the state. So right now we're just really doing that response, making sure people have their basic needs. And that way we can help them as much as we can right now, knowing that most people are out of their homes and not going to be able to return for the foreseeable future.
We're speaking with Kelly Kaminsky, who is a social worker and the director of disaster services for Catholic Charities of Charleston in the PD region, which is the northeast part of the state. So, Kelly, you've talked about response and what Catholic Charities is doing to respond. But give our listeners concretely, what does that mean? What types of help is Catholic Charities giving to the people who have been impacted by Hurricane Florence?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a great disaster service program here in the state of South Carolina. We cover the whole state, and we have been able to actually use our mobile response unit for the first time in this storm, and we are providing food boxes, cases of water, cleanup kits, hygiene kits, and baby items to the communities that are most impacted. So we've been setting up distribution locations in areas with our other volunteer partners and the counties to actually bring the services to the families, because so many people are flooded in. They can't get to our parishes. They can't get to office locations. So we've been taking our mobile response unit out and bringing the needed items straight to those communities.
And I assume you're covering a pretty large area because the waters, the floods were pretty extensive, were they not?
Yes, we are covering an extremely large area right now. And one of the biggest barriers is the amount of road closures, the amount of flooded ways. We've been going up and doing a distribution in Loras, South Carolina, which sits right under Lumberton, North Carolina, where there was a lot of flooding. And so they get all of that extra water. And it should take about 40 minutes to get there normally from our office. And it's taking around 2.5 hours to get there just one way.
Wow. I guess I was complaining a little bit at the beginning of the show about, since we have the United Nations General Assembly in town this week in New York, it's taking us a long, long time to get around. But Fannie, I think we should be a little bit less complaining about what we're experiencing because the people who are in difficult situations. Now, you talked about, 11,000 people were out of their houses. Did I remember that correctly?
Yes, there is an estimated 11,000 people that have had to relocate so far.
Is there any sense at this stage, when the water recedes, although it's wet and everything, how many people can go back to their houses, or how many are going to need more permanent place, or not permanent, but at least temporary places until those houses can be rebuilt? Any sense of that yet?
Right now, it's still too early. We know that a lot of the water that is still sitting there still has a lot of ways to go before it's going to recede. So it's really hard to know that until all of our rivers have crested. We're probably looking at least 2 weeks to a month out for those that have minor and moderate damage. And from experience from our Hurricane Matthew and our 2015 floods, I mean, it can be a year, year and a half before families can move back if they've had major damage and need those major repairs with muck outs and mold remediation and actual reconstruction.
Now, as we would say, Kelly, this is not your first rodeo. I mean, you've been involved. Unfortunately, you've been involved in helping people to respond and recover from previous disasters. How's your previous work compare with this? What are you seeing now that maybe you did or didn't see the previous times?
Well, I'll say first off, I kept telling God that I was retiring because we were closing up our Hurricane Matthew recovery program. So I think he needed me to stick around a little bit longer. So in our previous disasters, I will just say the response time hasn't been so long. I mean, usually we've seen a hurricane come in. It comes into the coast. It hits us. We have a little bit of flooding for a couple of days, but then we know what the damage is. We know what we're dealing with, and we can make a plan. And the same thing with our 1,000-year flood in 2015. It sat over the state from Hurricane Joaquin, and those were a hard couple of days, but then it was done, and we knew what we needed to do. This, we're just, it's a very helpless feeling to just see your coworkers, your staff, your volunteers, your community just keep going underwater every single day, and areas you think aren't going to flood, areas that have never flooded in the time that this town was made are flooding. It's really devastating, both for us as staff, as responders, and as a community to just have to continue to wait to see what the full impact is going to be.
And Kelly, the reason for that is that just more rain came, more water came? Is that why?
And the hurricane, if you remember, was such a slow-moving storm that it just sat and sat and sat over the Carolinas for days. And then we get most of that water. Once it's done, our rivers take it out to the ocean. So we're always kind of the delayed reaction in the PD area. So we're always dealing with it a couple days after. But we also had this time the initial rain of it just sitting over our state for so long.
We're speaking with Kelly Kaminsky, who is the Director of Disaster Services and the Regional Coordinator of Catholic Charities of the PD region, which is in South Carolina. You know, Kelly, in the past year or so, there have been lots of disasters in a variety of ways. I mean, there have been you know, we think of the water, but there's been huge forest fires. There was the lava thing in Hawaii, which not as extensive, but for a small island, you know, really hurt a small community there in a very significant way. We've had a variety of things that have happened in the past year. So disasters are not kind of once in a lifetime things or only one region. So what I would like, because I think this may be helpful to listeners throughout the country, because you're involved with a group of the voluntary organizations who are active in kind of getting ready and responding to disasters. And many communities throughout the country have those voluntary organizations that come together to kind of think about, to plan for, and to react to that. So tell us a little bit about your work with the initials for that spell out VOAD, with that group in the Carolinas, and because listeners throughout the country may want to know that there are such organizations in their own communities too.
Yeah, so VOAD, there is a national umbrella for national VOAD partners. For us at Catholic Charities, that would be our partners at Catholic Charities USA, and they kind of plan on a national level what they're going to do to help respond to local agencies' needs during disasters. But in each state, there is a state VOAD, and these are your statewide partners that can provide relief services, response, and recovery. And they work year-round to make sure that we have up-to-date plans on how we're going to handle different regions and different disasters, depending on what the most prone hazards are in your specific areas. So in the Carolinas, obviously, we're extremely worried about hurricanes and flooding. So our state VOAD works on who are all the partners in the area, whether that's the Methodist or the Baptist or Salvation Army or Red Cross. And we all sit around the table in our state and have quarterly meetings to make sure we're all on the same page and that all of our areas are covered. And so there aren't pockets that aren't receiving services. And then on a local level, you can have regional or county VOADs, and those are your partners that are right in your community every day. So here in our area, we have the Horry and the Georgetown and Williamsburg VOADs that are active and working in this response. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to know you're not in it alone, that you have your partners who do this every day side by side with you, and we couldn't do the work we're doing without all of those partners.
Kelly, I want to just take a moment to go to the next stage. And I know you were very precise in talking about how you're still responding. And to some of our listeners, the reason why Kelly said that is because, you know, when we kind of try to help people in a disaster, the first issue is to respond and make sure they have food, make sure they have water, that they're safe, et cetera, et cetera. But then there is, after that response phase, there's a recovery phase. How do people rebuild their lives? How are communities rebuilt? And Kelly, you serve as the disaster case management chair. And that's a particular type of service that organizations provide, case management, which deals with the long-term recovery. So tell our listeners a little bit about, well, the waters go away. Why don't the people just get their lives back together again? Isn't it over once the water goes away?
Yeah, that'd be super, super nice. But most times people aren't able to move back right back into their home. So what we do with case management is we work as an organization to pair them with a disaster case manager on our staff, and they help walk them through the process. Because one of the first things we're going to encourage people to do is apply for FEMA assistance and work with their insurance providers. But a lot of time that paperwork and the process can be confusing. You can go through multiple appeals. You have to submit a lot of documents. And sometimes just having somebody to help navigate that after your entire life has been thrown out to the trash because it's covered in mold and water can be one thing too many. So our case managers will work with families one-on-one to help guide them through the process of the assistance available to them, both federal and state, throughout the recovery process. So starting with FEMA and then working through state programs like CDBG that may be available to families. And then for families that aren't going to qualify for any of that assistance, or the assistance that they receive is not going to cover the amount of their home repairs, and if they are not able to recover on their own, we will then send in contractors at Catholic Charities and start working with them on repairs and rebuilds of their home.
Kelly, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us. And more importantly, thanks for the work you're doing in continuing to respond to Hurricane Florence and the work you'll be doing long term to make sure that people's lives are rebuilt and their homes are rebuilt. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Kelly Kaminsky is the Director of Disaster Services in the PD region of South Carolina with Catholic Charities of Charleston. So thank you for being with us. And we'll take a break. And when we come back, we got a lot of news that we're going to share with people, Fanny, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. So I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is Just Love. We spoke about what's going on in the world. And we kind of reflect upon what's going on in the world from our Catholic social values. And so we just spoke about the awful hurricane in South Carolina with Kelly Kaminsky, Catholic Charities there that responding. And when the waters finally recede, they're just about going to recede, which means there's going to be a while before people's houses dry out. Kelly told us that like 11,000 people are no longer in their houses, which is huge. So we spoke about that. But Fanny, there's a lot going on in the news. But a lot of that, let's talk about kind of a fun thing that's going on. Let's talk about the chapel closet.
Sure. So Father Goyo Hidalgo, he's an associate pastor at St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. So he recently posted a video showing a nine-year-old girl's at-home chapel. So in the video, the young girl's mother shows us her daughter's closet, which is turned into a chapel. And according to Father's tweet, she invites her siblings to come and pray. So in the closet, there's a wall. There's a holy water font. Yeah, holy water font, a photo of the Blessed Virgin Mary, of infant Jesus, guardian angel, a crucifix. So there are some religious books. So she has her own her own little religious oasis.
Oh, that's neat.
It is neat.
That is neat. Did you have anything like that when you grew up?
No. I don't think we had enough closet space in my house.
But did you have any pictures or a whole?
Yeah. I mean, my mom has always been really, really religious. And we've always either had a crucifix or an image of the Virgin Mary, something to that sort.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's neat.
It is
a
really
neat. A little bit of a...
And she's nine, which is very surprising. That's cute.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know who I would cast in that role?
For a movie?
Yeah.
Okay, who?
Young Sheldon's sister.
Oh, really?
Have you seen Young Sheldon?
I've seen it in passing, not the whole thing.
She is such an imp.
Really?
Oh, she's such an imp because she knows that Sheldon is a weirdo.
Yeah.
And so she really plays to him being a weirdo and kind of like tries to figure out how to embarrass him and stuff
that's,
like that.
You know, that I think that's a sibling thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's such an imp that I could see her
that
saying,
would be cool.
I'm going to do a chapel in my closet and stuff like that. So anyway, but all right. So, all right, so let's, you know, I do want to mention, without going into a lot of detail, we're still dealing with the nomination of the Supreme Court justice. And, you know, our listeners know that there's a little bit of a lag sometimes between when we tape this and when they actually may be listening to it. So it's hard to kind of keep up to date because there's a lot of things that will have happened by the time that this is being broadcast. But the one thing I do want to reflect upon is I'm just very depressed and very, very upset and whatever, because in all of this, it seems to me it's brought out so many things that are not good, that are bad. And, you know, I wrote to somebody this morning, I said, my prayer for God, to God, is I said I'm kind of a little bit holding off on justice and world peace. I'm asking God for just a little bit more decency and a little bit more truthfulness. It seems to me that all of that has gone out the window in so much of the partisanship in the way that people talk about issues, they frame issues. Boy, you know, everybody is raising up winning to the level. You know, we don't have to be decent to one another. I'm trying to annihilate your side, your position, you know. And boy, I that really depresses me. So the issues that are being raised are incredibly serious. They need to be taken seriously, that there needs to be an opportunity to try to understand what the reality is. And even when people are very sincere and they truly believe what's going on, those have to be weighed in a variety of ways. So I'm not talking so much about that, but I'm talking about the response and the way that elected officials, the way that the news, the way that everybody is dealing with such a very serious issue, some very serious accusations. And it really, I'm not happy because it... these are very serious. We could treat them more decently. We could try to, you know, focus on truthfulness and decency for one another. And so, not a good situation. And I'm not commenting at all on the substance of what's going on, but just we got to create a better atmosphere in how we deal with very, very difficult and serious issues in the public sphere. So, anyway, so having said that, let's move on a little bit. So there's been, Fanny, tell us about the new regulations that the federal government is putting out with regard to with people seeking green cards.
Sure. So Catholic leaders are speaking out against this. The Trump administration proposed a rule against announcing that they would deny green cards to legal immigrants using public assistance. So they announced this on September 22nd. The federal law always requires those seeking green cards permits allowing immigrants to live and work permanently in the U.S. to provide they will not be a burden to the U.S. government, but it is never considered the use of public benefits such as food stamps, housing vouchers, in its decision to issue the cards. So the action forces millions of immigrants who rely on public assistance for food and shelter to choose between accepting federal help in the form of Medicaid, food stamps, house vouchers, or other forms of public assistance, or seeking a green card to live or work legally in the U.S. So, I mean, as you can probably tell, you know, from this article, Catholic priests and leaders are just completely disgusted and appalled by this announcement.
So here's the situation, Fanny. Thank you for mentioning that news note. Mm-hmm. There has always been a kind of a requirement, part of the immigration process, that somebody coming into the country is reasonably expected to be able to support themselves. And the people bringing them up promise that they're going to support them if whatever, so that the person doesn't become, what, as they say, a public charge.
Right.
But how you define that is what is part of the whole debate. And right now, it's being defined in a very, very stringent way that will make it very difficult for some immigrants, if they come through a stretch of hard times, to use some of these benefits because they may be afraid that they won't be able to continue the processing of their green card. And so it's a little bit of a very, very difficult situation. And, you know, something that, as Fanny mentioned, that, you know, we don't think as a public policy, as the Catholic Church, that's a good way to go. It's being overly restrictive, and it's being overly kind of rigid. And the reality is that, in fact, immigrants use public benefits at a lower rate than people who are born in the country. I mean, all things you control for, all the variables, all of that type of stuff. And the reason for that is very simple, because immigrants come here looking for a job. And so they don't want to go on benefits. And even sometimes when they're in hard times, they won't, because it's mm-hmm. not part of the notion of being industrious. Do some? Without a doubt. Do some go on public? Without a doubt. But on a whole, immigrants are not big users of public benefits. And in fact, in certain categories of immigrants, they can't. They're not eligible for benefits right. for 5 years.
Yep.
So, you know, and I was at a meeting earlier in this week, and, you know, somebody was talking about a new situation with regard to asking a question on the census about one's immigration status. And, you know, and it was interesting to me because the person was putting forth as facts things that are not facts. I mean, we don't have the largest percentage of illegal, undocumented immigrants at the moment. It was a little bit further in our past, not now. But sometimes in this area, there's not a lot of fact that people are dealing with. So anyway, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking about another very serious situation, the disaster, the opioid crisis. We're going to be speaking with somebody from one of our Catholic Charities agencies who has experience in working with young men who have been experiencing a certain amount of substance abuse. So I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Come back in just a moment. The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Remember those walls I built? Well, baby, they tumbled down. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. Just do it. Just love God. Just love our neighbor. Just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is our weekly conversation. We talk about what's going on in the world. We talked about the hurricane in South Carolina and the great work that Catholic Charities is doing there, and Kelly Kaminsky is leading that. And now we're going to speak about another type of disaster. I mean, we don't usually refer to it as a disaster, sometimes a tragedy, but unfortunately, that there are a lot of situations in which there's the disaster of drug addiction, substance abuse. And we're going to speak now with Stephanie Ali, who is a counselor, vocation coordinator at CREATE, one of the Catholic Charities affiliated agencies in New York. And we're going to speak about her experience and, quite frankly, talking about the fact that it might be a tragedy, it might be a difficult situation, but it's not without hope. Stephanie Ali, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love.
You're very welcome, Monsignor. Pleasure to be here.
Hey, thanks for taking the time. So give our listeners a little bit of a sense of how did you begin to get into this work of helping people who have some substance abuse problems?
Well, I'm a corporate America runaway after 9/11. I realized at that point that I'm making money, but I'm not giving anything to anyone. Had no idea or plan on how or what I would do. All I knew was I needed not to do that anymore.
What were you doing?
I was a middle manager in a corporate 500 company.
Okay.
And I left them after 32 years.
Oh.
And I began volunteering in a Protestant church that did work with my parish with the children for after school. And along with just manual labor in my church, I would sweep, mop, wax, clean, iron, wash, whatever was needed. I had to find my niche. And one of the priests who was in residence in the parish, Father Chris Keenan, approached me one day and said, "What did you consider?" And I'm, "Father, I'm a mother of daughters. You're talking about young men." So he says, "No, Steph, I believe you can do it. I believe you can do it." Well, he brought me in, and the first day, pardon the expression, I felt like I died and went to heaven. If you find the job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. Helping these young men is a job I love.
Stephanie Ali, who is a counselor at CREATE. So, Stephanie, you ran away and found a home.
Found a home.
So yes, tell us about the work that you've been doing there, and obviously your voice says that you love it, but tell us a little bit about the work that you actually do.
Well, I find programs for young men who are underskilled for employment, also undereducated. If you do not have your GED or high school diploma, we find programs that will work with them as interns. And paid internships towards moving forward towards acquiring their GED. I help them get into Job Corps, work programs, whatever is needed to move them forward. If they're experiencing any type of substance issues, we work with our main office. We have a residential and an outpatient to get the young men the help they need.
So this is maybe a little bit off topic, Stephanie, but it fascinates me. You know, everybody's got to go to school. What's going on in our schools that, you know, too many of the people and too many of the young men, they're just not learning? What's going on there? What do we got to do to get them educated?
Father, Monsignor, if we could get them into Catholic schools when they're young, we would begin to whittle away of whatever this issue is. But they're in public schools. They're vying to be in charter schools. The competition is high to get in the charter school. It's also very selective. So a lot of them are left out, and if they're falling behind when they are in school, the programs that are there are really not helping the young men. For example, if you have a special need and you should have an independent education plan, you might have received an initial plan, but the follow-through on getting what is needed is not there. You'll find plans that may not have been updated for a while, but they need a lot. Most of all, they need someone who is interested and will move them forward. They have to see that someone cares in their success, because they may not care.
You know, Steph, I was at a breakfast meeting with the former chancellor of the New York City school system, and she was talking about the fact, what you just said, that they need somebody who cares, who's going to pay attention. And so they've done a pilot project, and for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it, but it basically has had a name in which in fourth, fifth, sixth grade, all of the students were given kind of a coach or a professional social worker who would kind of try to work with them on coming up with those independent plans. And it seemed to me, from what she was saying, is that it was very successful. The teachers were teaching better because they could focus on teaching and didn't have to do some of the other stuff when there wasn't this additional professional who could do it. And, you know, I'm reading between the lines. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that's kind of some of the stuff you've just been talking about.
Yes. Yes, yes. Which is the last, I'd say, 20, 25 years, something happened in the education arena, the public education arena, that's what we're seeing today. I'm not sure what it was. I'm not sure why the script was flipped, but we need to look back at what was going on back then and bring back some of what we threw out, perfect some of what we acquired, and help these young folk, because it's not just young men, it's young women. The young women are the mothers to the children who are moving forward. We have to get re-engaged, re-involved. We need mentors, male, female, but they have to have faith and belief in themselves and the fact it's doable. I tell the young men here, the only thing I cannot fix is death. Everything else is fixable.
So, okay, Steph, then tell us some of the good news stories, because sometimes I think, you know, people say, they're lost cases. Nothing good is going to happen. They're drug addicts, they're bum, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not true, is it?
No, it isn't.
So tell us some good news.
It's far from true. We've had three young men recently who have moved on to college. Musa Kanate, who is in Borough of Manhattan Community College, is doing very well, studying to be an engineer. We've had Edie Diallo. He's on the West Coast right now. He is a footballer, and he is in college. And
so is he an American footballer, or is he a real world footballer?
He wants to be real world.
Okay. We always have to clarify that for our American listeners.
Uh-huh. See, I might have said soccer for American, but he's right. A footballer.
Right. If he were a baller, it'd be basketball.
Right.
So give us a little bit about, you know, you talked about those two. Pick one of them, whichever one you want. Obviously, you got involved with them because they needed a little help in making that positive step. What were some of the problems that they faced before they kind of arrived at CREATE?
Literacy issues. They were new immigrants to the United States, and they got excellent help from a worker, Students in Special Projects, and this woman got them everything they needed to build the foundation to move forward with their education. They got their high school diplomas, and now they're in college. But the village has to come together. It's not a one-off or a single entity who can assist to resolve all of that they're facing, everyone must come together and embrace and do what we can do to help them move forward. Because it's not just one isolated issue they have. There might be a few others, even from immigration status to where am I going to live, where am I going to work if I can work. I'm not healthy. I need medical assistance.
And isn't that really what makes CREATE such a wonderful place and the types of things you do? Because even though CREATE and you don't have all of the services or all the things they need, but you kind of take the individual seriously, and what maybe CREATE can provide, CREATE does. But if they need help from some other places, other parts of the village, you kind of put together that. You reach out and do it. So anyway, so listen. Thanks, Stephanie Ali, so much for being with us on CREATE. And, you know, I'm kind of happy you ran away from your other job and you found a home at CREATE. So thanks.
Thank you for being with us. You're very welcome. Be well and safe.
Thank you. Stephanie Ali, Counselor and Vocation Coordinator at CREATE. You know, I want to end our show with, Fanny, there was the United Nations, because I picked on it for traffic, but just give us a little summary of, just very briefly, what was the theme of President Trump's talk there?
Well, he, I'm a little upset with our president.
Okay.
Because, you know, you invite people to your house and then you're late when they show up. So someone else has to take over as host. And I think that's really messed up. So that's first.
Was he late?
He was late, and he was at the Trump Tower, which is literally across the street from the United Nations building. So he spoke about, I'll quote him exactly. So he started off and he said, "I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country." After that, the crowd laughed, and the president then said, "I didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay."
I want you to go on to the part where what he talks about patriotism.
Yes, he also spoke about our military, saying, "Our military will soon be more powerful than it has ever been before. In other words, the United States is stronger, safer, and a richer country than it was when I assumed office. We are standing up for America and for the American people."
Talk about the patriotism part.
So I'll just go into the rest of it. He also stated that his administration view on the world, saying, "America will always choose independence and cooperation over global governance, control, and domination." After that, then he spoke about, you know, being okay with having friends and foes across the world. And he says that moving forward, we are only going to give foreign aid to those who respect us and frankly our friends.
So let me just comment on this for the last couple of minutes. There is a real perspective that flows from our Catholic social teaching. And what flows from our Catholic social teaching, while we respect, and part of our teaching is the value of the sovereignty of nations, we believe that there is even a greater value in solidarity among nations, and that there is not really a great deal of value in one nation trying to be dominant over another nation. Absolutely no problem in a nation striving to do good, striving to do the best for its people. No problem in a nation defending its border. But the overarching issue is the issue of solidarity, that the nations of the world stand together in trying to foster human dignity, trying to respect the image and likeness of God in every person of whatever country. There is a version of American first, which, if that is at the expense of other nations, that we say from our Catholic social perspective, let's hold on a moment. Because we think we should deal in solidarity. we should work together with others. And so some of that rhetoric is really a little bit problematic from our Catholic social teaching. It may not be from a political perspective, may not be from an ideological perspective, but from the way that we try to look at the world, we got to be a little careful about some of that. Anyway, thanks for being with us on Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.